I'm Allison Keyes, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Michelle Martin is away. It's time now for our weekly visit to the barbershop, where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week are freelance writer Jimmy Israel, syndicated columnist Ruben Navarrete, civil rights attorney and editor Arsalan Iftikhar, and political science professor and blogger Lester Spence. Take it away, Jimmy.
Thanks. Hey, Special K, what's good?
Hey, what's up?
Yo, and the rest of the family, welcome to the shop. How we doing?
Hey.
Man, you know, we're just making it work. You know, Arizona is all over the news these days, and there are a couple things I want to get to, including that ad with Senator John McCain that he's catching all kind of political flack for. But, long sigh, I need to get a little personal first, because my team went down hard last night. The Cleveland Cavaliers were all poised to win it all this year. Oh, and the sure. National Basketball Association with LeBron James and Shaq on the same team leading the charge, but...
Didn't happen.
Alas, 'twas not to be.
But what did happen is the Celtics put them away in Game 6 last night. Yeah, Arsalan is holding his arm all in the air, wearing a green sweater, whatever. But Boston moves on, Cleveland goes home, and here is LeBron James himself talking about the end of the season and whether he's thought about becoming a free agent.
I have no plans. At this point, I've made no plans. So, you know, the fact that it's over right now is definitely a surprise for myself. But, I mean, it is what it is. A friend of mine told me today after the game that I guess you have to go through a lot of nightmares before you finally, you know, accomplish your dream. And that's what's going on individually for myself right now.
Wow. Thanks for that, Special K. A-Train, now before you start gloating about, LeBron is dead. Well, check this out. I don't know if he's going anywhere anytime soon, because you know he has a 35,000 square foot house here in Bath Township that he built from the ground up, complete with a casino, 2-lane bowling alley, barbershop, nice. Aquarium, sports bar, recording studio, and a master bedroom with a 2-story walk-in closet. And his mom, he bought a house for her right down the street. So guess what? You know, all the rumors, they're flying, but I don't think he's going anywhere anytime soon. I think that's the kind of investment a franchise player makes. Just FYI. But A-Train.
Yes, sir.
A-Train, okay, whatever. But A-Train, to your point, man, here's your time, man. How good is Boston?
Number one, LeBron James is still the best player on the planet. Number two,
yes, sir.
I feel bad for the city of Cleveland. They've had the catch, the drive, the fumble, the shot, and now they have the debacle. And number three, you know, as someone who picked the Boston Celtics to go to the NBA Finals again, I got laughed at all the way to the bank. But all I got to say now, you know, there's this huge poster outside Quicken Loans Arena with LeBron James, and it says, "We are all witnesses." So on behalf of Celtics Nation, I got to say to Cavaliers fans, witness this, Cleveland.
No!
His green sweater, by the way, is shining in the lights in here.
That's what he meant. Oh, okay.
Dr. Spence, the good doctor, what's the diagnosis? What happened here?
I think he actually, his injuries were a little bit bigger than what he's telling. But also, it's important for people to remember, it took Michael Jordan like 6 or 7 years before he actually got one, got to the championship and actually won it. He had to go through Isaiah Thomas. Kobe Bryant was blessed in that he had Shaq with him, but he had challenges as well. I think that this is just LeBron's challenge. So people are going to be calling him the equivalent of Tragic Johnson until he gets one, but it's coming. He just has to go through this period.
You think so? How you read it?
I'm excited about the idea of LeBron being a free agent, even if he stays in Cleveland.
He's staying.
The fact that this guy could – I want to see the numbers that are racked up here, you know, since I don't have to pay the bill. I want to see exactly what he's worth on the open market and what Cleveland's going to have to pay to keep him. So,
I think well, as long as deep, I'm not I mean, paid.
You'll pay at the ticket booth,
right.
I guess. But.
Well,
according to NBA rules, the most that any outside team can offer him is a 5-year, $95 million contract, whereas Cleveland can offer him a 6-year, like $106 million contract.
Oh, is that
so basically
all?
NPR yeah, money, that's what we're talking. Chain. Okay, I see.
Right, yeah.
That's barbershop money.
But wait. What I want to know is what's going to happen.
Don't tell me.
What's going to happen in the West, though, with my beloved Lakers? I'm a Bulls fan. Let me be clear. I am a Bulls fan. But without the Bulls, gotta love the Lakers. So what do you think is up with the matchup between L.A. and Phoenix, Jimmy?
It's Kobe. It's all about Kobe.
Oh, man.
Just, I'm sorry. You know, that's just, it's like that. And that's the way it is. Huh.
What?
Dr. Spence.
Yeah, I agree. I'd like to see Grant Hill get one. And Steve Nash has not only one of the best games, but actually has the best politics probably in the NBA. But it's going to be really difficult for them.
Los Suns, baby.
Right. A-Train, give us the over and under.
Yeah, it's gonna be Lakers and Celtics again. I'm telling you, it would have been Lakers and Celtics last year if Kevin Garnett hadn't been injured. So we're going to see a clash of the Titans in the finals.
Ruben, the view from the West Coast.
I wouldn't count the Suns out yet. I don't know. But you know, things happen. I mean, obviously, last night was a surprise to some folks. So it's just getting good. It's getting good, and I think I'm rooting for the Suns now. The little Suns is a sentimental favorite because they put their politics. Les is right. They put their politics on the line out there because of this Arizona law. There's a lot of folks out there, including Phil Jackson from the from the Lakers, coach of the Lakers, who says that this should not be mixing politics and basketball. I don't know where he's been. Those two have been together. You know, for a long time, ever since Bill Russell days. So.
Yeah, that's right.
Special K, you all about the Bulls. Ain't nothing in Chicago but hot dogs and bullets.
But LeBron might be there. So, take that.
Doubtful. Wake up.
Smell the coffee.
Right.
Or the hot dogs.
Right.
If you're just joining us now, you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News, and we're in our weekly barbershop. We're speaking to journalist Jimmy Israel, Ruben Navarrete, Arsalan Iftikhar, and political scientist Lester Spence. Back to you, Jimmy.
Thanks, but
talking about Bulls.
All right. Well, you know what? Let's stay in the West for a few minutes. Arizona specifically. Now, there's been a lot of talk about a new law tied to illegal immigration, of course, and a Senate race in which John McCain could be in big, big trouble. He's kind of altered course, huh?
Well, 3 years after saying that a U.S.-Mexico border fence wouldn't be effective, he's now saying, get it done. Here's Senator McCain's ad. Picture him walking along the border fence with one of Arizona's county sheriffs.
Oy. He sounds awfully quiet.
We're outmanned. Of all the illegals in America, more than half come through Arizona.
Have we got the right plan?
Plan's perfect. You bring troops, state, county, and local law enforcement together.
And complete the dang fence.
It'll work this time. Senator, you're one of us.
I'm John McCain, and I approve this message.
One of us, Senator.
Great googly.
Yep. Wow. Well, now,
the
now
few,
for those
the proud,
that,
the ignorant. This is great.
Right. For those of you that don't know the dang fence he's referring to the Southwest border fence, which was kind of envisioned by the second Bush as a series of sensors, surveillance, and actual fence work to protect the nearly 2,000 miles expanse of this border. Ruben, get it, bro.
Yo.
Get it.
Well, listen, I'm not one of those folks who objects to the idea of a border fence because of, you know, the imagery of having a fence or a wall on the southern border. I'm not with that. I'm about what's effective. And I listen to the experts. The experts are Border Patrol agents with badges and guns on the border who say to a person, to a man and a woman, that border fencing is ineffective, that it's a distraction because you build a fence, people will go around it, over it, or under it. And they have done that time and again. And so the experts on the border say it's a waste of time and money to do fencing. Politicians who campaign for office tend to talk about fencing because it's popular with voters who don't know any better. And the last thing I'll say about this with regard to the McCain ad is it's unfortunate just to see where John McCain has gone, because now his position doesn't even mesh up with where he used to be. He used to be a lot more clear-headed and logical about this. The reason you have, as the sheriff said, so many illegal immigrants coming through Arizona is simple, because you have so many people in Arizona who are hiring illegal immigrants. You need to build a fence around the Home Depot and start locking up some soccer moms. Then we'll talk.
Wow.
I hear you. I hear you. You know, the Obama administration put the kibosh on that whole thing a few months ago. Dr. Spence, was that a good idea? I mean, what do you think of what do you think of this whole kerfluffle with the fence and McCain flipping like this? What's up?
I think it's just another example of 21st century racial politics in America. So when you talk about, he actually didn't talk about illegal immigrants. What he talked about was illegals, right, as if that's all they were. And then that last line, when the officer says, you're one of us, he's not just talking about law enforcement. He's white. McCain is white. He's making an explicit reference. Well, I'm sorry. He's making an implicit reference to racial connections. Right. And that's the type of politics that people assumed that we would move away from. But as America becomes more multicultural and as economic hardship increases, you're going to see much more stuff like this.
A-Train?
Yeah, I mean, you know, what's next? You know, is Arizona going to hold a referendum to change their name to Jingozona? I mean, you know, here we're seeing, I mean...
Don't give me any ideas.
Yeah, I know.
Right.
You know, if McCain's talking about, you know, building the danged fence, he needs to shut his danged mouth. I mean, you know, he's veering so far right because of his, you know, challenge, you know, by J.D. Hayworth and, you know, the recent law that we've seen where, you know, basically brown people like me would have to carry our freedom papers. And, you know, this, you know, ban on ethnic studies bill that's, I mean, it's getting redonkulous. I mean, it's absurd.
Yeah. Scary stuff, Allison.
I want to jump in, Jimmy, with another topic that I suspect is going to be on the political radar all summer, U.S. Supreme Court nominee Elena Kagan. Let me read a little of what Ronald Sullivan wrote in an article for thegrio.com. To my thinking, he writes, Elena Kagan is self-evidently qualified to sit on the Supreme Court. She's an outstanding legal scholar, a terrific teacher, and a thoughtful and forward-looking administrator. She's practiced law at a major law firm. She's served as a government lawyer and held a high-level policy position in the Clinton White House. As well, she's served admirably as our nation's Solicitor General. She's smart, fair, independent, respectful of the opinions of others, and a dedicated public servant. All are qualities that will make for an outstanding Supreme Court justice. Jimmy?
Well, you know what, Dr. Spence? Now, as it happens, you wrote a piece about kind of there's kind of this, well, I mean, a lot of people are talking about Elena Kagan. And you wrote a piece for The Root. And you're thinking that people should look twice at her, be hesitant about her. Why is that?
Yeah, first of all, So the professor, the good professor, is actually right. I mean, she's extremely intelligent, extremely qualified. But the question really isn't whether she's extremely intelligent and qualified. I mean, I wouldn't expect anything less from the president. The question is what types – does she have a transparent record where we can kind of sort of gauge where she'd actually be on the issues that are important to us? Now, now we know that because of the president's party that she's going to be further to the left than Roberts and Alito. But what we don't know is to what extent is she going to be to the left, right? So what Obama is left with are a number of black supporters, among them his own professor, Charles Ogletree, basically telling us that we should basically trust him, not pointing us to any real data to say, wow, this is what she's done to show how she'd vote here. This is what she's done to show how she'd vote here. If this were George Bush and we were talking about his candidate with her record, just her record of black professors at Harvard, we'd be saying a very different thing here.
That's right. True. Well, you know what? Can I? You know what, Lester? We're boys, right? But I'm gonna push back just a hair on that. You know, I mean, look, my whole, you're the dude with the PhD, but my thing is, I'm not sure if I want to see another static, predictable viewpoint on this in the Supreme Court. You know, I like the fact that she's kind of a wild card. I like the fact that there isn't a whole lot of paper trail. You know, I just like it, man. I'm kind of wild and woolly. I like a wild card every now and again.
Well, this is what I'd say. What I'd say is that I can actually see how that would work if in the process of confirming her quote-unquote wild cardness led to a larger conversation about what the law should be, and then under what circumstances should we expect somebody who goes outside of the norm. But what we're going to have here, because she doesn't have a paper trail, is not that conversation, but rather a conversation that says, oh, wow, she's really smart, she's really qualified, and she's got boys that we like.
Well, and also...
You know,
the R, get it.
Ruben, jump in quickly, very quickly. I think the left has a point in one regard. When you put up Sam Alito and John Roberts, it's no mystery as to how they're going to rule on cases.
Right.
They've been explicit up to that point in memos they've written, in cases they've decided, and things they've said, and organizations they belong to. You know what you're getting when you put somebody like that on the court. And with Kagan, I think the left's complaint is, why is it that the right gets to put up somebody who's dependably conservative, but we have to put up a wild card who on terror cases, anti-terror cases, is likely to go in favor of government suppression, in favor of government power, and on affirmative action is likely to go against affirmative action because she had, as Les pointed out, a miserable record. Dean of Harvard Law School hired like 29 people and 28 of them were white.
Although Sullivan, I have to jump in and say Sullivan stresses she recruited him, so it's not like she didn't bring anybody.
These are tenure-track positions, and the most important thing piggybacking off
A-Train?
Piggybacking off what Ruben just said is We have to look at who she is replacing. John Paul Stevens was the liberal anchor of the Supreme Court during the Bush administration. Right. He pushed back against Bush on Hamdi v. Rumsfeld, on Boumediene v. Bush, on Hamdani versus Rumsfeld. You know, and so we all know that Elena Kagan is no John Paul Stevens. You know, at the end of the day, you know, she, you know, calls for expansive executive power and the ridiculous assertion that the whole world is a battlefield. So basically you can be an enemy combatant, you know, shopping in Kmart, you know, indefinite detentions. In 1995, she lambasted the Senate confirmation process for Supreme Court justices, saying that it was vapid, hollow, a charade for not answering questions. And then yesterday, the White House spokesman basically said she's not going to answer any questions and defer to stare decisis on virtually everything. And so, you know, Ruben is absolutely right. You know, you have the conservative activist Rats Pack, the Roberts, Alito, Thomas, Scalia, you know, and you have Justice Kennedy, who's now the new Sandra Day O'Connor in the swing vote. And so people think that Elena Kagan might help swing Kennedy over. But, you know, there's no liberal anchor in the Supreme Court anymore.
Okay, they might actually swing – now you think about it, they may swing Kagan over to the right.
Yeah,
I mean, in one of these cases, she might go over to their side. And it's another reason for civil libertarians to be disappointed in Obama. There's a long, long list of areas where he's let them down. This is another one.
Let me jump in because we are so out of time, gentlemen.
All right, Special K, get it.
Jimmy Israel. I love the Special K. Jimmy Israel is a freelance journalist and author of the book The Denzel Principle. He joined us from member station WCPN in Cleveland. Ruben Navarrete is a syndicated columnist, and he writes for CNN.com and the San Diego Union-Tribune. Joined us from San Diego. Lester Spence is a blogger and political science professor at Johns Hopkins University, who came from WEAA in Baltimore. Arsalan Iftikhar, sitting in the studio here, is the founder of TheMuslimGuide.com and a civil rights attorney. Thank you, gentlemen, so much.
Peace.
Peace.
Odale.
And that's our program for today. Tell Me More is produced by Bracton Booker, Jessica Deal, Jasmine Garst, Arjun Hutchins, Lee Hill, Douglas Hopper, Jennifer Longmire-Wright, and Emily Oxenschlager. Our line editor is Louise Clemens. Our senior producer is Alicia Montgomery. The program is directed by Rob Sachs with help from Monica Evstatieva. Our technical director is Kimberly Jones with help from Vince Muse and Greg Gavin. Our theme music was composed by Underdog Entertainment with additional arrangements by Ian Honeyman. The supervising senior producer is Tashima Walker. I'm Allison Keyes. You've been listening to Tell Me More from NPR News and the African American Public Radio Consortium. Let's talk more on Monday.